Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:13 PM and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is April 26th, and I apologize for the little bit later recording. I've had a lot of technical difficulties with my keyboard, and I believe I've fixed them, so here we go. We had a big move today and really last night in Bitcoin, and this is a very clear upside key reversal. The key to the key is size, and this is a big one. It's at least 10%, so that at least confirms near-term support. I was saying in the video on Friday that following a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, it is quite normal to see a process of right-hand extension, and a ranging phase after the massive reaction can transpire, usually below the top, and usually doesn't go all the way back up to the peak, but it can. And what if the more important point is that we've had a significant loss of uptrend consistency. Now, I've continued to see stories by people saying that this is just a blip, that the price is going to rocket higher from here, I've saw even one article today anticipating that the price is going to go up 10 times from here. And obviously, that's a lot of enthusiasm being expressed about the asset. Of course, in order for Bitcoin to rise 10 times from here, it means it would have to have a market cap of 10 trillion. And that's a lot. It would put it among the largest currencies in the world. So that's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility when one looks back at the size of the market only a few years ago relative to where it was today, and then to use a linear expression to plot the future forward. Fortunately, the future very seldom goes in a linear fashion. And in order for Bitcoin's market cap to approach 10 trillion, then we're going to have to see an extraordinary amount of money printed. So if you're going to bet that the price is going to go up that much, well, then you must also be a firm believer in the willingness of central banks to continue to print with abandon. And realistically, I think probably most people don't have much reason to doubt that central banks won't just continue to go on and do what they have been doing. So this, I think, is an important characteristic here. The important point, of course, is that despite the enthusiasm that people continue to show for the sector, we've had the trend in consistency, and that does not gel very clearly with the continued bullish prognostications. So what can we anticipate from here? Well, we're due a little pause, and we're getting it. Now, the price could yet push on to new high ground. It's quite normal for a trend, a particularly a big trend, to lose consistency at the penultimate peak. But the challenge in believing that is I was clear in pointing out the lack of consistency that this triggering of a midpoint danger line represented back in March. And this is a bigger pullback. So we've had a number of different inconsistencies, but within the context of the much bigger trend, perhaps then investors are looking past this, thinking about this as a bargain, and then potentially also wanting to push it on to new highs. The one thing I know for certain is that I'm not going to be back in the market anytime soon, and if I do so, it's going to be at a smaller position size. My short position today in Ethereum was triggered, I was worried about the rebound that we saw last night, so I tightened up the stop, and it was triggered right off the open in here today, closed below the $2,500 level, but I no longer have a short position. I'm a little bit cautious about taking out another one until I see exactly what's going to happen with Bitcoin. Now, when we look at other markets, we're certainly not in a drought of interesting activity. The Baltic Dry Index has now completed a lengthy base formation. And when we look at exactly how low prices are relative to where they were back between 2003 and 2008, well, I think people can understand just what the potential is for upside. And this is a clear breakout. And it's another example of an index internationally that was on the cusp of breaking out right before 2020, then gave up an earlier advance entirely and is now breaking on the upside. So in many respects, the whole pandemic experience was just a hiatus for a large number of financial assets. Now, what we can also look at is that a number of the very significant shipping companies have also popped on the upside. And Maersk is pushing on to new high ground. This is the B share. The A share has just completed a very lengthy ranging phase, and the B share has done it a little bit earlier than that. Then we can think about COSCO shipping, and it has been surging on the upside. And Evergreen, despite the debacle in the Suez Canal, it has done even more spectacularly better. So there's a lot of enthusiasm about shipping and the revitalization of the global supply chain, but also that shipping rates are rising. And there's also this renewed enthusiasm among shipping companies that they might be able to pass on their additional costs. And that's not something that they were easily able to do the last time around. So there's a big investment cycle that we're potentially on the cusp of in the shipping sector, because there's competition now for additional fuels. With the passing of the IMO 2020 rules at the beginning of last year, they weren't really felt because of the pandemic. But now we have the double impact of the tighter emissions rules occurring at a time when global trade is surging back from a period of inactivity. So these are significant factors which are helping to support shipping prices. And because there is potential for additional fuels and green taxes and green levies to be imposed upon shippers, then that also enhances the inflationary argument. The one thing that we can think about with shipping prices was that they came all the way back down into the base. And I wonder, is that going to remain the case on this occasion? Perhaps we're going to see that higher shipping costs will be sustained through both bull and bear markets, and that we're moving into a higher plateau overall for shipping prices because of these additional green levies. Then, when we think about the industrial resources, well, a lot of dry goods being shipped are in the form of ore, and copper prices pushed on to new recovery highs in here. This is the highest level since 2011, but the bigger picture here is that it's been an orderly consolidation, and we're right in the region of the upper side of what is effectively a 15-year base formation. Anytime it's been above $4, it's failed, and now it is finding support in the region of $4. It would appear to be only a matter of time, and perhaps only a matter of weeks, before we see copper breaking out to new all-time highs. And that is where the argument for a secular bull market arises, when you start to see instruments that have been going sideways for in excess of a decade breaking out to new all-time highs, then there is obviously something that is propelling it higher. When we then think about what's going on the stock market, the S&P 500 has been really quite steady, and it is holding around this 4,200 level. But we have quite a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. And one of the things that is certainly helping it to be sustained on the upside is the relative strength of the largest companies. So Amazon was up in a dynamic manner in here today, and it is right in the cusp of completing what is a 9-month range. There's speculation that they may go through a stock split, and that would, of course, bring down the price of an individual share and widen the pool of retail investors who can afford to buy them. That's a good reason for why the stock was higher in here today. Apple's earnings are imminent, and the share was also off its lows in here today and still consolidating around this 130 area. So we can certainly think about the S&P and how well it has been doing. And of course, then there's Tesla, which has also been pausing over the course of the last 2 weeks. Now they're about to release their earnings. The share was in mildly positive territory. I do wonder how long or what form this issue they're having in China is going to take. Very theatrical way of that issues with braking systems was revealed to the world a couple of weeks ago at the Shanghai Auto Show, with a protester standing on top of a Model 3 and shouting in great detail about the braking system. And then only a week later, the government coming in and asking Tesla to hand over their trade and their data that they've acquired from all of the Teslas on the road. And then we had the announcement from Huawei that they have decided that they are now, in fact, going to produce their own car. So one of the factors that attracted Tesla to the Chinese market was that they have got attractive cars, and it's the biggest automotive market. I wonder, did they give due consideration to the risk that they may be forced to share their most intimate trade secrets to propel competitors within China? And that, I think, is a big unopened question. So we'll see what happens with the earnings, but at least the share continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. There was a block trade in over 1,000 shares in the last half hour of trading, and it didn't bother the Nasdaq, but it did have an impact on the Dow. So that did finish on in negative territory. We are definitely seeing more program trading because of this short-term overbought condition. And the continued strength that we're seeing in bond prices is the primary reason that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The 10-year Treasury future was off its low in here today, and it's continuing to hold the 132 level. But it hasn't been up in a dynamic manner in a week. And there's still a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. There's obviously a lot of argument going on about what are the inflationary impacts of everything that we've seen in the charts so far relative to the determination of the Federal Reserve not to raise interest rates. So the dollar index fell all of last week, and it was in negative territory, although only mildly, again in here today. There's this to me looks like a completing type 3 top formation, and the clear evidence of resistance in the region of the trend mean. The majority of stock markets were in reasonably positive territory today. The Euro stocks continues to push on the upside, and when we think about the rollout of vaccines, it's something like 20% of the European population has had their first shot. The FTSE 250 continues to trend higher, and it was up in a pretty dynamic manner again in here today. So this continues to look like a pretty consistent trend overall. When we then think about the longer term, it's been a clear outperformer, and it is pushing on to new all-time highs. So it's certainly the mid caps are continuing to lead in Europe, and they have been doing so for more than a decade already, and there doesn't really seem to be any real impetus to change that trend. And until that happens, I think that until we have clear evidence of a more enthusiastic bull market in Europe, where investors are starting to pitch up from around the world, then it's likely that the mid caps will continue to outperform. What I find interesting right now is that Meituan has been one of the better performers over the course of the last year, and it has pulled back aggressively in response to the Chinese government's continued efforts to bring the big tech companies under control. So far, those efforts have been largely focused on companies like Alibaba and Tencent, which we might think of as the mega caps. Meituan is in the second tier. It's also a very successful company, and it is a large market cap, but it is not in the same stratosphere as Alibaba and Tencent, and it is now being singled out for opprobrium from the Communist Party. So that is putting a clear limit on the growth potential of Chinese tech companies, and particularly those that have anything to do with social media. Now, the problem is that Meituan is on an historic PE of 310. And if they're not going to be able to grow their way out of trouble, then it really suggests that the PE needs to come down and that valuations will need to compress. But if valuations need to compress, that's going to represent a really quite significant pullback in the stock price. What is interesting is that Tencent has got a virtually identical pullback to the trend mean and is still barely steady. But the emerging markets ETF was in positive territory in here today. Now, when we look at the constituents, well, Meituan is the fifth largest, and Tencent and Alibaba are the second and third. So the heavy lifting is being done by companies like Taiwan Semiconductor and Samsung Electronics. And then we move down into the banks, the telecoms companies, and then you've even got Vale is in number nine. So we have a lot of Asian representation, and then when you go further down the list, you really have to go a long way before you find anything that's outside of Asia. So in many respects, the MSCI Emerging Markets Index is a China plus index. And that suggests that what happens with those very large companies is going to have an impact. When we then think about the ex-China portion of Asia, so ASEAN is a reasonable way of thinking about that. Well, that index pulled back extremely violently in 2020, and it has subsequently been consolidating over the course of the last 4 months. But it's got a lot of work to do, and it has been going sideways for what feels like an awfully long time. The majority of the ASEAN markets peaked in the 2011 to 13 period. When we think about, for example, the Indonesian ETF, I think we get a much better picture overall because we have more back history. Because it was after 2012 that the currencies started to depreciate, and since then we've had an extremely volatile period of trading. So if we are going to see more growth and we're going to see a return to demand dominance, well, what we're also going to have to see in order to easily invest in it will be a change in the makeup of some of these indices, because China now represents the majority of the big weightings in the MSCI emerging markets, and it suggests that there is going to have to be a different way of investing in the sector. So the Aberdeen New Dawn is more of a pan-Asian representation. So that has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and it did spectacularly well in 2020. But the performance, of course, means that they have got weightings in China, and but they're slightly different weightings, and we definitely have more of the other kinds of companies, and you're also getting some Australia in there as well. So there are different ways of accessing these markets, but certainly I think the risks coming out of China right now, and not least geopolitical, but the fact that they are deliberately trying to contain the growth potential of their most successful companies, that's not friendly to investors. So it is going to have people being or taking a second look at China exposure. But the Asia dollar index is firming from the region of the trend mean. So there will be money looking for a home in Asia. And obviously, India is going through a very difficult period right now. And I guess one of the things that has people puzzled is why is India having such a difficult time when they sailed through the initial part of the pandemic and really a lot of people felt like they had sidestepped it. They may be suffering the overhang from having a large population of diabetic people. But one thing is clear, and it is that the Nifty remains reasonably steady. The RBI is willing to engage in quantitative easing and provide as much liquidity as is needed. And the rupee, having weakened substantially in the first couple of weeks of April, has at least stabilized. I think it would be very hard to make an argument for why the rupee should be getting stronger at right now, considering the threats that the economy faces. But the reality is that the number of cases in India is starting to moderate, and that is something that we've seen right across the boards in different countries, that we do tend to get these very short and very large spikes. But then you start to see efforts to try and mitigate the threat imposed, and the cases start to come back down again. And we are potentially now on the cusp of seeing that occurring with India as well. Now, when we then think about the wider commodity complex, the oil price has been rather weak over the course of the last 7 or 8 sessions, but it was well off its lows in here today. And this continues to look like a range. I'm very much in the camp that this is not a secular bull market for oil, but that does not mean that the price can't go higher in the short term. We're still in a supply environment which is deeply impacted by the pandemic, and there is a significant recovery in global economic activity, and that should correspond with a recovery in demand. But there is a lot of oil that becomes economic above $80, and we may yet see prices get up there to try and encourage that supply back into the market. And then when we think about the gold price, gold continues to steady here around the $1,800 area. We've had a meaningful rebound from below 1700. That was to be expected. So now we should be starting to see the big questions being at least partially addressed, because every time gold has bounced from a round number, we've had a big downward dynamic to cap the advance. So in the absence of a big downward dynamic, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. If we get a downward dynamic similar to the one in August or November or in January, well, then that would hold out the prospect that gold is going to go back down and test the $1,600 area. I think a lot of people are going to be deciding about what to do with gold in the next week or two, but that's obviously what's on the minds of people who are nervous. The other side of this equation, however, is that gold has been going through a period of a correction phase. It's been lasting now for about 9 months. It is quite normal that we can see these types of corrective phases in a bull market overall. The one thing that I've got at the back of my mind is the synchronicity. Now, we've had at this explosive breakout, and then we can think about what the gold miners look like. They've rebounded right to the region of the trend mean, and they're challenging the downtrend since the peak back in August. But what I find interesting, and we really have to look at the gold bugs index to see this, that it's right in the region of the upper side of the base formation. When we look at the period from 2000 to 2004, we had the breakout in 2002, and then it also came down to test the upper side of the base formation, and then subsequently ranged, and it was a lengthy range, and that range persisted for a year, but the low occurred when it came back to test the upper side of the range of the base formation, and then it popped on the upside. So I think this is quite similar to what we're seeing right now, that we're really still only in the foothills of a bull market in gold. And the one thing that nobody likes to talk about is that the gains in gold tend to happen all at once, and that it is best bought following reactions. And in between those two opportune moments, then it does a lot of ranging and a lot of messing around, and it's extremely volatile and very frustrating. And unfortunately, that is the kind of environment that we're in at present. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.